This is LiveMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editor's Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar.
So the first story we discuss is this piece done by one of our reporters, How Independent is the RBI? Where it's a long analytical piece where he looks at, you know, how the RBI's credibility is being questioned after demonetization and, you know, how autonomous is it? What did you think of this?
It's a tricky question, right? I mean, and I think it's a question that's not restricted to India. It's a question that many countries all over the world are asking. And I think it's very difficult to find an objective measure of independence. The piece you're referring to speaks of one methodology where some Central Asian republics are found to have the most independent central banks. Now, they may, I don't know, but it has been my experience and it's also my understanding that Central Asian republics are rarely benchmarks when it comes to any issue related to governance, right? So in India, I think the problem is compounded by the fact of how the RBI governor is appointed and of how this is usually a very political thing. And I think in recent years, the process or the general feeling about the independence or the lack of independence of RBI has been exacerbated by a couple of issues. One is, of course, the book that Subbarao has written, a former governor of RBI, and speaks of issues he had with the finance ministry. And then, of course, there is the more high-profile instance of what happened to the last RBI governor, which is Raghuram Rajan. And finally, there is the issue of this RBI governor and how, quite honestly, he doesn't seem to have a voice. I think one of the roles that the RBI governor has to perform, it's not a major role, but I think it's an important role, is also communication.
True.
I think he has to be out there as a soothing, calming and clarifying presence, which the current RBI governor is in anything but. In fact, he's conveyed the impression that he is all but happy. I mean, he's extremely happy to do anything that the government wants him to do. So it's a tricky issue. I think a lot of it also depends on the individual in question, right? I mean, it's one of those things where, because let's not forget the fact that Subbarao was in the finance ministry, and when he went to RBI, everyone expected him to pretty much do the what the finance ministry did. But the fact that he didn't speaks of the quality of character of the individual and the quality of the institution and what it does to people who take charge to head it. We haven't heard the last on this. We're going to be hearing a lot about this, especially given the significant challenges that face India and what's likely to happen going forward.
Right. So today is also the day when Donald Trump takes over from Barack Obama and he ends his tenure on a high approval rating as per the polls, whereas Trump is sort of not so popular. There are a lot of protests. But what does it mean?
I don't understand the protests, right? I mean, because the process was democratic, he got elected.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the protests. And also this whole thing of not my president. I mean, there was a process. No one's ever going to be voted into power with 100% support from one side, right? I mean, not going to work. So this whole thing of not my president, I'm not so sure. So, but everyone has the right to protest.
But what does it mean for India, especially because Trump has been saying a lot of positive things?
We don't know. We have no idea what it means for India just yet. Will the H-1B visa issue affect Indian IT companies? We do not know. And why do we not know? Because I also think there is a base of H-1B visas that these people have and they probably don't need so much more. So however tight the process becomes, maybe it won't affect. But what about immigration in general?
Mm.
What about global trade? What about Pakistan? Right. I mean, those are questions that we do not have answers to just yet. We'll have to wait and watch. I mean, everything that has been said about Trump so far is based on what it's before he became president.
Mm.
Right? I mean, sure, he was president-elect for the last few months, but he takes over today. What's he going to do on Monday, right? And on Monday, what's he going to do for various trade partnerships that his predecessor took forward?
Right.
And we'll have to wait and watch. I mean, the initial comments coming from the Trump camp on trade are not positive. On visas and immigration are not positive. On China are not positive. Now, there is a school of thought that says if it's bad for China, it must be good for India. I'm not so sure, because trade is not one of those zero-sum games, right? I mean, it's not as if China loses, India wins. Tough to say. We'll have to watch very closely.
Right. We've also done another story on Startup India's flaws, because Startup India is now 1 year old and they announced a lot of measures in terms of simplifying regulations and giving funds, but there doesn't seem to have been too much progress on the ground.
It's a good point that you make, and I saw that editorial that we wrote, and I'm going to look at it slightly differently. I'm going to look at it from a very broad perspective. The first one is, I think it is contingent on government to make it easier to do business in India, period. And that includes all aspects and for all kinds of companies, not just startups. That's one. Have we done enough? No. Have we spoken about doing a lot? Yes. Do we have the intent to do a lot? Definitely. But we haven't done much. So that's the first thing. And this includes everything, right? I mean, from the procedural side to the infrastructure side to everything. So that's one. Two. This government seems to believe, at least when it comes to a few things, that, you know, you can wave a magic wand or create a fund and that's a panacea for everything and it'll boom, you know. You create a startup fund and you launch a program called Startup India and it happens. I think you have to accept the fact that there is a market mechanism for startups, and it is an extremely efficient and vibrant market mechanism which works not just in India, but anywhere else in the world. Mm. So for Startup India to work, it has to acknowledge those market mechanisms. It has to align with those market mechanisms, which is always difficult in India, right? I mean, I think every Indian government, even reformist ones such as the National Democratic Alliance, which is now in power, have disappointed when it comes to their ability to be market-oriented, right? Or market-friendly. So that's the second perspective. The third one is, I think we must look at benchmarks and we must look at very efficient systems that work, where there's a government program or a government institution and it is funding individuals, organizations, universities, small enterprises. The United States National Science Foundation is a brilliant example of this. Acknowledges market mechanisms, tracks funding and progress and everything else fairly efficiently, reasonably hands-off once the money is being put in.
Right.
And has actually delivered some fairly significant results over the years. And I think it's a good program on paper, what we've got. And on paper also, I think only in terms of the name of the program and in terms of its objectives. But I think the way it's been structured is not good. Mm. Fairly easy to restructure it, but I don't know whether they'll do it.
Finally, we move to the budget, which is just now a few weeks away. And supposing you had to give a couple of tips to the finance minister.
We are not in the business of giving any tips to the finance minister. But we've said this previously in our newspaper, and everyone else has also been saying it previously. It's very simple. At this point in time, for a variety of reasons, including demonetization, which has, as we've always said, resulted in an insignificant short-term pain. I mean, the government can look at various benefits, right, including it being good for the soul and all that, but it has caused significant short-term pain. We don't know what the long-term impacts are. And like I've always said, our newsroom is all for cashless, right? I mean, we've been supporters of cashless long before anyone, even the government, was speaking of cashless or even thinking of cashless. But at this point in time, business, consumer and investor sentiment is very low across India. It's not just rural India, you know, so there have been some reports, including in our paper, on saying how the focus will be on rural and all that. Great, might win you a few elections, but I'm not sure it would do the kind of things that this economy needs at this point in time. We need a populist budget which has things in it for everyone. I think that there should be some focus on rural, there should be some focus on urban areas also, not just in terms of infrastructure. Infrastructure extremely important. Why? Because gross capital formation, as we've pointed out some time back, has turned negative in India. So the government has to pump in a lot of money. I mean, you have to invest in infrastructure and do those things to get investment rolling again. So that's important. But at the same time, I think there should be some tax breaks of some sort to make people feel better again, to make them want to go out and spend. The government last year, when Mr. Jaitley announced that corporate tax rates would eventually be brought down and all exemptions would go. Extremely smart move. I think even at the individual level, they should bring down rates and get rid of all exemptions. And also, obviously, try and widen the tax base. Hopefully, this is one of the benefits. Demonetization could formalize a lot of transactions that were informal, to use a euphemism, previously. So that'll hopefully widen the tax base. They should do that and remove all exemptions, both for corporate and for individuals. And I think that would make companies feel better. It would make investors feel better. It would make consumers feel better, maybe spend more. So that's what you need. So I'm hoping they'll do it. There have been a lot of reports, including in our newspaper and on our website, that say that they will do this. I mean, and it's also come out in other newspapers, other websites. All seem to suggest that they're thinking along the same lines. Let's hope it happens, right? Because if it doesn't, I don't think we can go through another year with sentiment being low. Because then, you know, the process, I'm not saying things will go horribly bad. It's just that the process of recovery will then take that much longer. Because if you look at it, this government took over in 2014. The previous government, their last 2 years in power were a washout in many ways. And things were bad when they left. This government took over in 2014, made all the right noises. Didn't do all the things that we would have liked them to do, which is all right. But around 2016, October, before demonetization, the numbers were beginning to look good.
Right.
The macro numbers were beginning to look good. Corporate sentiment was up. Business sentiment was up. And then demonetization happened. I mean, I don't want to go into the motives of why it was done and all that. Enough has been written on that. But demonetization happened. And that was a shock to the system. It's a resilient economy. The fundamentals are still strong, especially if you look at a long-term view. I mean, our newsroom's view has always been that it makes sense to be long in India in the long term, right? But we need something to make sure that we don't take another 2 years to get back to where we were in October, right? I mean, in terms of the macro numbers, in terms of the corporate numbers, in terms of sentiment, I think you need some sort of stimulus to really accelerate that process. You need what economists like to call a sharp V-shaped recovery. Like, I mean, things went bad, came back to normal, and then you get back to where you are in October by first quarter of the next financial year, and then curve is obviously upward, because I think like I've said, you know, I'm going to repeat myself, the fundamentals are strong. So I'm hoping that they recognize this and do this. You never know. Things have gone wrong before.
Right.
In some way, you know, as financial journalists who've been looking at and analyzing the budget for many years now, I think we all get used to disappointments. But our disappointment will be nothing compared to how bad consumers and investors and businesses will continue to feel. That's not good for the economy.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter or Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.